looking for my paper back here. So that is giving me this is anyway, let me live with it. This is more than likely what I believe. We will take it somewhere. And then we had this particular legislation. There were a number of submissions that came with regard to this particular legislation. If my memory serves me well, among the issues that were raised, and I think we will have to pronounce ourselves on all of them, was one, the question of on the definition, some definitions that came on the leave work termination of pregnancy, on section 3, etc. And then there were some that were raised with regard to the principal act. Now, do we have the principal act with us? Yeah? You have got it? Yeah. I have one also because there were certain issues. Yeah, I'm so sorry. Oh, you're a statue. Okay, we had a number of those submissions. Now, maybe let's take it. We find the most efficient way of dealing with it. Take advantage. You start making all the errors and start it. That we actually coming up with the proposals that we need to change. But we are going through the submissions and look into areas that we propose.
There was nothing much except the problem clarified on the beginning.
Yes, you can.
That gentleman, you had a problem with name. That's your money.
Maybe why don't we go with clause by clause? What is the best way? Since all of us have got the sense of the submission.
And I was going to say, if we propose that we go clause by clause, starting from the definition in the life, because from Bomena, there has been a suggestion that we should insert a certain definition in the group.
From Bomena in the summer. Okay, that was the summer submission.
Yeah.
Okay. Honorable members, perhaps a good deal with both, look at both the principal F and as well as this one, but the one in front of us is D21. Honorable Samuel, what are you saying?
Yeah, I was saying there was a suggestion from Kama by Dr. Bonella, which says we must include intent under the definition because of that area which deals with consensual objection. So they said they felt the we feel much more comfortable and very pleased if we can include income within the community.
We are on the definition.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you very much. Because he was saying, in as far as he's concerned, there is passive recognition of the objective in the CTOP. What the F and the deal does not impose an explicit obligation on the perform termination. The F requires the doctor to advise the person requesting the TOP of their rights under the F. It does not place an obligation on the doctor to refer that person to a suitable person to perform the termination. The conclusion can be drawn that although not explicitly stated, the F appears to recognize the right for the person. I think there was another submission where it was saying the tender rate for you to actually go to perform, you undergo a training. And therefore it means you volunteer to undergo the training. It's not that any person who's a midwife or a nurse who goes to do it. And in that regard, therefore, in the light of the vow, though it may be said that the right of the law was to perform this, does enjoy a more to come up processing. It needs to be clearly more defined in the act. It should be reinforced as far as legally possible without compromising women's rights. Therefore, it has to include the COP, the specific circumstances under which consensus association must be exercised. This is one of the things from Mr. Formella.
Okay.
Yes.
There were quite a few organizations that want specific clause in the act pertaining to consensus association. So I think what you're looking at, and the doctors obviously have to acknowledge it. But in order to, what I picked up with the hearings is that in order to invoke your right as a doctor, if you strongly believe against abortion, that you have to go to the constitutional court, which takes a lot of time and money. And if everyone is in agreement, the pro-life, the pro-choice, the government, the department, everyone is in agreement that doctors have a right to exercise their conscience with regards to abortion, then I don't see, you know, what it won't be any damage or hurt to put a clause in the act and clear up the situation once and for all. And many of them, submissions gave different definitions from all over the world. Most of them use the British clause, but there are others from, you know, all from Australia, Denmark, New Zealand, all progressive countries, or particularly New Zealand, where they do have conscientious objection.
You see, there was IPAC, Mututu Gabriel, who said the following, on conscientious objection, you have to be trained if you are a registered midwife, therefore, you do so voluntarily. However, in an emergency, WHO guidelines, all providers are there to save life of a woman. That's what her Mutsu Gabriel from IFAS or that country director was making. I think she was the last person, I think, to make such a submission to us. And then Kenosa, that wanted to understand you. Also, does it specify, does it actually mention any issue on consensus of the effect?
Does the department then indicate exactly was it because it came out of the hearing that indeed they had to stand in the process of reference?
Of course, to find that from the department, huh? Anyone can see that from the report.
We also are obliged to give information to anyone who wants to submit. So we cannot object to giving information that we have that to be given to the specific candidate. That's in the
You see, the University of Cape Town Faculty of Health Sciences, when asked about this same question, on conscientious objection. They say you must treat conscientious objection without compromising access. There was also that particular thing was I think it was Dr. Mushi. Yeah, well, I'm trying to respond to this question. So I'm just listening to this one you're making. It doesn't differentiate. You see, how would you as a nurse, midwife, voluntarily go for all the training on termination of pregnancy, which is defined in the essence, then I come back and say, you must be allowed conscientious objection. But it doesn't say any nurse or any midwife, it says those that have gone a prescribed training under this head. So it might be helpful. Can I just see this amendment? I'm just trying to think. On my side, so how would you
decide? Can I just say something?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, you make a point about if someone goes to training, why would they object to terminating pregnancy? To me, the doctors aren't in that category of dementia. They're not midwives or nurses, so therefore, they have special category of the person they own. But also, I suppose people change beliefs and opinions during the course of their life. But if I can just, again, getting back to regulation, I mean, this act's been in place for 11 years, and we're just making regulations now for it. I mean, am I right? I mean, it's been, when was this act been acted? 96. Mm-hmm. And you're just formulating regulations for conscientious objection now, 11 years down the line. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, to me, having a clause in the act would clear up the matter once and for all. But And secondly, also the civil union law has a clause of conscientious objection. Now, just to give you a personal view, that would affect me because I'm gay. If I went to go get married, somebody could say to me, sir, I'm not going to marry you. It denies my access to that service. You know? So but I understand and respect that, but not everyone has the same view as me. Similarly, with doctors and nurses performing abortions. I agree. Although, you know, my sentiments are pro-choice, the fact of the matter is, I understand why some doctors and nurses don't want to perform abortions. And I think we should cater for those people in this act.
Yeah, I just want to find out what are the doctors who are performing this surgery. Are they not also included in the special as the midwives and the registered nurses? Are they not undergoing that particular training?
Yes, they do. Prof, it will be difficult to assist to that particular assertion because the Constitutional Court brought back the act because it said there was not enough public participation. And if my reading is good, training. Okay. I'm saying that the Constitutional Court I'm saying that just clarify this issue. I'm saying in my own view, the Constitutional Court brought back after the NCOP submission to say there was not enough public submission. But I'm not sure if you find what then you should be dealing with. And I think that's a quandary to put that. That's why you were saying that was in the principal act, consensus objection is not defined. Nor is it there. But and then you will find that we'll have to see how we deal with it. Whether in the way that has been suggested earlier on or in putting a specific clause, but that clause must be put in such a way that the UCT School of Public Health, or this is School of Public Health, UCT School of Faculty of Health Sciences, said whatever we do about contestant objection, we should not deny women access. So all that, but how we formulate that in such a way that we don't end up opening the floodgate to people blocking the implementation of the Constitution using contemptuous objection. So we should be very, very clever in what we seek to do. Otherwise, we can actually put a clause that undermines the entire of the legislation.
Yeah.
How we do it, I don't know.
Here's the other one.
Oh, Honorable Madunis.
Yeah, I just want to start with you. The bill we are dealing with here is what was ruled against by the Constitutional Court. This is an amended, this one, not the principal head.
Okay.
And we are dealing here with the amendments as they appear in this bill, and not otherwise. If that is the case, then we have to start from the end.
Now, you see, the danger. I don't want us to go back and deal with this thing and I think you use it for throw choice, no?
Yeah.
These people throw life. Throw life will be the objective to the termination of pregnancy. Objective to the termination of pregnancy, am I right? I don't want us to deal with this thing here. Then they go back, oh, these people have no time to start to oppose it. How do you deal with it?
Can I give Martin?
Yes,
everyone quite familiar with that. We had an amendment which we're supposed to deal with. But, I agree with you really. When we had the public hearing, to allow people to speak on any particular issue, even in accordance with relevant to the Principal Act. And you did that for a particular reason, and I support that, because it would have caused a lot more trouble, I think, if we prevented people from giving certain submissions. But as a committee, we have to apply our mind, and it doesn't mean because we have we get this from the department that we have to fix it. We can also make additional amendments if we want to, and we could even take out, for example, maybe Section 2 if you want, and replace it with something new, if you want to. I'm not saying we are going to. So the fact that we are going through the principal bill in conjunction with the amendments. There's no wrong with that. And if we are going to make additional amendments to ones that we've given to us initially, there's nothing wrong with that either. You know, that's the process. We have to apply our minds as members of Parliament. We're not just a rubber stamp of the department.
I think the New Zealand one is
obnoxious.
The New Zealand one, actually, is blanket, terminate, don't, you know, it's a very bad one. The Belgian one, it says that neither a physician nor a nurse nor a medical assistant is obliged to cooperate with the termination of pregnancy. The physician is obliged to inform a patient interested in abortion during the first visit of his refusal. It's a very difficult one also. Most of them are, I don't know, you see, because it may be informed by the thinking of some of these countries themselves. I mean, if you do this in America, you know, Americans, you know, they don't even want the use of condoms, you know. Take off the old cartoonist approach that we enjoyed in our country some years ago, you know. South Australia. But I don't know. Most of these, they seek to do this, but they are actually going to be opposed to what we are doing in South Africa. All of them are designed to undermine termination of pregnancy.
Well, except the British one, which is, except in a situation where it's necessary to act immediately to save a life, no person shall then be obliged.
Yeah, but. Yeah, you see, that's a problem. The National Health Act says no one will be denied medical immediately. Now, termination of pregnancy is not always remedial. So, it means any doctor can say, I don't want to, until that time is presented, itself as a medical. But it again closes a bed of women who may want to terminate. Can you see the problem with the British government?
Yes, the department said, if it's providing a service, right, such as a board, has to then ensure that its facilities, which we heard during the hearings, not all of them even up and running, but where they provide abortions, that they have on a 25-hour basis, post-choice medical staff. That's the obligation on the department. You can't run our services without having the staff to work. You know?
Yeah. What is the constitution saying? Yeah, they, you know, I'm sharing the constitution stuff. Yeah. No, I'm just trying to think. Another Mushaf, Mr. I'm so sure Mr. Mushaf, right?
The constitution is very clear. Section 27 says that everyone has a right to health access. And it emphasizes receiving reproductive health care. And this, the Act, including this amendment, are seeking to accentuate this right that is afforded in terms of Section 27. So my own legal opinion would be that we have a provision in the Act that seeks to sustain this right that is afforded in terms of the Constitution. We are actually doing something that is very contrary to what the Constitution makes provision for. As my colleague here has said, we are drafting a policy that would clearly not be contrary to the Constitution itself. But I would really advise against having a clause that is explicitly empower nurses or doctors to withdraw from communication if they object on the basis of conscience or anything.
You see, and then the same clause of the Constitution says no one may be refused emergency medical treatment. And then A, everyone has the right to have access to health care services, including reproductive health care. Now, if you put basically deny women health care services, if everybody deny women reproductive health care services.
It's a bill of rights, but I haven't looked at the Constitution.
Yeah.
It says no one may be discriminated, I think, on the basis of quite a few criteria. Belief, I think. Religion is another one. And doctors also have a right in the bill of rights. And what I'm saying is you can have a clause in the Act that is not in conflict with the Constitution, obviously, often it actually comes unconstitutional. But what you're saying is that the Civil Union Act then may be unconstitutional in some ways. I mean, denying people access to services, and those other theories of how they grant you that. But the government has acknowledged the fact that people are allowed to object on the basis of conscience in the Civil Union Act. And in fact, government has doctors can object. And we're just going to go to Constitutional Court, which is a bit ridiculous. So why not make it easier for everyone and clarify the situation where we can determine on what grounds doctors and nurses can refuse to perform an abortion?
Mr. Matilda?
That there is a specific training that must be undertaken. And one was of the view that that is where people have to make choices whether they are going to be available for specific activities or not.
Mm-hmm.
And the minute a person has taken a position to say, I'm part of this activity, and then undergo the same. And we are able to personally assist. And to provide a clause to say that particular person, sometimes in future, must have an opportunity to say, no, I'm not really interested in this. I think that is enough. That is enough.
You see, the Bill of Rights, Let's go to Israeli. There will be the section equality. That's clause 9. The state may not answer discrimination directly or indirectly against anyone on one or more grounds, including race, blah 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 blah, language and sex. I'm not sure the lawyer for the next one. Let me put the question of that as the last one here. And then somewhere it then says on the right of reality and belief and opinion, Matthew 15, I think, those of them that follow rules means they say everyone has a right to freedom of conscience, religion, thought, belief and opinion. Religious observances may be conducted as state or state-aided institutions provided that those observances follow rules made by the appropriate public or they may are conducting educated structures. No, that's not the one I'm looking at. There's another one I think way too relevant to this one. But again, you can see each one of them is part, but it protects others not to be abused by the religious issues. There is a certain that is looking for it. So I'm saying that we will need to look at this whole thing in its entirety. There is a certain that is in the thing, but I can't find it now. So I'm saying that I think we should be very, very circumspect and careful that we don't pass something that may completely undermine what is put to be in there.
Regarding the training of doctors and midwives, nurses, I understand that if they want to perform abortion, they're going to go into the support system, so making that contributed. So as far as doctors and midwives, is that part and parcel of the training anyway, or is it special training over and above what they would normally be, like the doctors? Is it part of the doctors performing abortion? And for midwives, is it part of their duty or the son or whatever it is?
But I'm a medical doctor for 30 years. When I was trained in emergency care. And it doesn't say termination of pregnancy, broken legs, excluded eye. You trained in emergency attention. And that is what you are trained in. And what happens is, if there is any specific need to be in service of trained otherwise in any other special thing, you will get that special thing. And this can come in many ways. You can be trained in emergency care, advanced life support, and it will always have qualifications to it. And that's basically what it is. I don't see how we can now be looking at conscience in terminating a pregnancy. If I have a conscience in having a leg of somebody I hate, am I going to say I exercise my conscience on that? Because this is basically what it is. And I hope the committee will understand it in that respect. I know we are dealing with a specific issue here.
Sir, that is training of nurses, training of doctors is a profession on its own, and we are not actually being told that we are going to be trained in this area specifically. Because we have asked a question around consensual protection, and that was her answer around the question.
There's no advisor.
I'm looking at this. For instance, if you are looking at that chapter which deals with the life, if you are talking about life, everyone has got a right to life. You cannot limit that. Yes. If you are talking about the duty, you can limit that right up to a certain extent. So that's why it will be important for us to be common values. Because
If I talk about it, if I talk about it, each can be used as a different of the field. I think I would like you to have to move from that point.
Yeah, I want to come back to my earlier point. It's true that the parking hasn't used at any time in relation to the authorizing regulation. How would the amendment make visible as well as the 96 Act? The reason for the amendment to this regulation on any matter. Now, I'm not quite sure whether we should highlight the matter or whether it would be a kind of a common ground, a compromise to make a reference to the matter in relation to anyone who I'm not able to make it a correct terminology or phrase or say, but one is trying to accommodate some of the workers concerned that the minister make a regulation like the department is currently dealing with any matters, including a matter of somebody having difficulty to perform a service or reaching the conferences or whatever. There's a bill also section 5 or 9 the regulation also somehow delegates that responsibility to the embassy to do that in consultation with the minister that is making regulations such as consulting. I think that environment ought to be very, very much sufficient. Parking should just expedite the regulation of the policy that they are making at the current moment. I'm not quite sure what I'm saying, but I'm saying there is provision for the minister to make regulations, and those regulations on any matter can include the specificity. So when there is a regulation being made at the current moment, in the meantime, it is please the GA, is it necessary for us to stand and consider making a specific reference to something like that in the industry?
See, the problem is the minister can make regulations that will make him contradict it.
Mm-hmm.
And if we here say the constitution and other explicit issues including the aspect as I have said, you know, the staff is seen as far as it goes. The minister can't then see the regulation of the unless we specify ourselves as the fellow committee to do this. Otherwise, we have to go to do it. I mean, it's really something that we feel. The key thing is access, saving lives, and the NOSA put the submission of the NOSA. But you know, was even saying that the NOSA was saying, oh, she was raising the charge of concessions, especially as far as justice. The National Act's scope of practice prescribed that if you don't feel comfortable, you need to face it. So that's what she was saying, in as far as justice was concerned, that's what the NOSA was saying. In terms of the scope of practice is prescribing that particular aspect. And then the question of examination in terms of the clinical work, the protection, question of saving lives, access, and opening access. So I think for us, I think it's important that we have to look at this together. All what we need to say, is it necessary to put therefore things that are already covered in order in the statute, the constitution in particular, that is a benchmark in terms of this, and then you put another clause, that's me. And I think, let's look here, I mean, I made a calculation of the submissions, let me just address a little bit here. I think the true light, if I'm right, or I don't say true light, eh? The true light submissions were about 51. That was the majority of the submissions were done. And all principally, in fact, I missed this, that people thought it was a joke, but I think it was a serious thing. But almost all of them had prescribed format. You could say there was a big canvas in elsewhere as to how to deal with this legislation. You could actually say there was a format, counseling, this and this, gestation period, and all the covered in a particular way. So it was not just a purely a view of a certain concern broken, but well covered. Of course, it's good to do that because it's a territory today. It creates a form of organization. But you really have to mobilize all your resources to undermine such an important legislation just simply because the religious people don't believe in it. I think there's a big fundamental problem. Can I give you the department one of them?
Thank you, Honorable. And one other thing I thought I should mention is there for the committee to consider. This act is about the user, not the provider. And we shouldn't always be confining ourselves to the provider and trying to define what the provider should be. The user comes to the, and this is covered very well in Chapter 2 of the National Health Act. And I don't think legally, but my colleagues are here, each from the legal side. We have instruments, or should I say tools. We have the constitution, which is the basis of our law in the country. And we have acts that have come, and all of them are aligned to the constitution. And in every act, a certain aspect is looked at. And we can even draw it to the point where the act is there, and if there is an issue in the act that needs regulation, we then come with regulation. And this is the process. And if I may, Mr. Chair, Honorable Chair, address myself to the issue of conscience. The issue of conscience came up a lot during court proceedings. And if we look at all that, even coming up with a policy by the department had to wait the process of law. And hence, once that has been covered, it would be easy to come out with a policy. And the department made sure that during all this process where the legal issues were being resolved, we were currently looking at coming out with guidelines.
I think I wind up to gravity to what's those in this particular thing. Mr. Buyan.
Thank you, Joe.
Honorable Matsumela.
Sir, I'm tempted to go back to the question.
question under the position funding provision. Number two, it says we need to create a human rights council. So your wish is to create people in a society must understand what their rights are and understand that they have a duty to respect and tolerate other people using their rights. The other, I think it's the doctor or professor said, we are faced with a legislation, which says, who is the user at the end of the day? I think in this case we need to consider that a funding provision of the constitution, because this amendment are solely related to the user. And since I've been a sponsor of this, I did deliberately this time because across all the pro-life submissions, this issue of consensual objections was raised. And doctor, that's what Dr. Mstanda in his presentation, when asked about this question around consensual objections, he said all the necessary documents are in place for now. It doesn't mean, Honorable Mike, for 11 years in the democracy, there's never been anything in place. When you go back to the National Health Act, chapter 6 and 7, it stipulates clearly who is the user, what is the user's right, and who, again, is the provider's right. And when you go back again to the Constitution, Section 36, which has been mentioned by the state lawyer, say each and every right has a limitation. Thank you. I think in this case, I would suggest a closure to the matter, because I was the one who had the effect for that.
I was honourable member says about the founding principles of the constitution. If you take that and look at the Civil Union Bill, then clearly it infringes on people's rights there. Mm-hmm. And if the ruling party in the government has allowed that in one act, then no, they've already contacted the constitution to look at the notion in the Civil Union Act. And the fact that regulations are being developed by the department years and years late, the department concedes once again that people have a right to self-care based on their religious beliefs or their conscience. They concede that. Well, I'm just looking at anyone. I'd like to look at everybody. And in order for the department to develop regulations around the issue, and for the minister to supply a mind, the fact is there should be a clause in the act to guide them on the panel. And we shouldn't just delegate all our responsibilities to the minister and the department as MP. We should ensure that the bill is the best possible bill for everybody, and apply our mind to a clause that allows concrete purposes.
Can we understand the? Can we understand the? What is the? Firstly, the flaws of money. The section dealing with potential objectives in the Civil Union Bill. My understanding then, in the Civil Union Bill, is that we were in the termination of pregnancy legislation, the policy that we said, 1975, I think. 1975. There was a problem with the question of recognition of, shall I use, same-sex marriage, that is a good thing, and partly because, in South Africa, there are a number of countries that have been advancing in the world, because they are, I'm sure, the issue of cut-up-bearing, the land and the opposing the some people in America, but principally informed by the Calvinist education and Christian teaching we come from under the National Vatican. That was also borrowed from the own perverted views from Hitler. He said, this is just looking to the history of the National Party, some of the professors, the conceptualized, the question of apartheid, etc., separate development, and this has developed. Who were feeling that he was something ungodly, and therefore did everything, even when people gave the voice to the bottom. Those people were seen to be, they were called all sorts of things, the politicians in the borders, in the northwest of Obama, just look into the history just of the SADF then. So we're coming from a particular system. That was bad. And we're coming from a society with sometimes very bad benchmark of thinking that maybe sometimes this very strong religious majority views in the country. That was sort of discriminatory in their view of same-sex unions, etc. There were a few progressives in the country over time. Even from in the ANC, I know a lot of people when they were even in fact while we're feeling that even we in the ANC at a certain point in time, the number of people were actually not understanding the crossing of the roof for in as far as good, you know. In fact I'm sure even as we're actually even dealing with the situation ourselves, you know. So there was a view that we must therefore move forward. But we have to recognize that there's this entrenched attitude in South Africa around this particular issue. And in this regard, therefore, it must allow, I'm sure maybe in another 10, 20 years time, I'm sure you thought you were already criticizing some people around this particular issue. There may be a reversal of this thing. And therefore it was saying, let's allow the question of this union to be. But where a magistrate or a marriage practitioner may still want not to do so, let's give an avenue so that we don't unintendedly find the frustration of the particular situation. I think I just thought it's important for us to understand the history and origin of the civil union within it. But this is a separate issue. Completely separate, support life, it supports the well-being of women, it supports the discrimination of women, it's an entity. It's completely different. So it can't be equally treated in that particular aspect. Unless we take it in an ahistoric basis, and of course we're going to make certain mistakes in the understanding and conservation of the statutory situation. The state law advisor,
No, nothing much. I just wanted to show you that the effect was
the
marriage of family, like I said, the marriage of family issues is for a man to family. This chapter does not compare the marriage of the person to a man to the family, or must provide a fact that such marriage officer informed the minister in writing that he or she objects on ground of contract to solemnizing the family in terms of this chapter.
Can you see? Quite a loose formulation. But again, you could say it's just sanitizing particular values. It does not compare you to do this. But a marriage officer is not dealing with life. He's dealing with happiness of people. He doesn't deal with life.
You're right.
Yeah, but principally, you know, the happiness, you must inform the minister if you don't want to do that. You don't want to say that in writing as to the grounds in which your conscience is saying. So that your same-sex people want to marry are protected. Tell us why you don't want to do it. Because you are there, either in the Home Affairs Department, etc. Part of your practice is to ensure you implement this particular. Thank you very much. Okay, Mr. Musafi.
I just wanted to emphasize this providing a particular service to ensure something that is safe and safety. If the Department of Defense is going to include a provision that allows soldiers to object on the basis of questions, not to be employed during the schools or to do certain things, I think we'll be setting a bad precedent that will be including on the rights that are.
And again, I'm sure you remember when there was an organization from the campuses and conscription campaign. Part of a number of progressive forces accepting the concession of aggression at the time. But because if you were 18 years and you were white, you were compelled to go into military service. You had no option. But now to join the defense force, now it's voluntary. That makes you join the medical fraternity is voluntary. Why don't you want to adjust yourself? Want to be a nurse? It's voluntary. You have to be. I think the eminent lawyers there are such a helpful in dealing with this. May I? Sorry? May I suggest, honorable members, if all of us are here, I think we actually conclude this particular issue.
I think it clarifies the issue for both the state and for the doctors. I really do. I think it's in the best interest of everyone. And yeah, if you just note that I'm sad.
Yes. Thank you very much. No, but it is. But you understand the reasoning around some of this.
Yes, I understand
the same as well. Yeah. Okay. That was, thank you very much. I think it was a useful discussion around the next was still. Where were we?
Definition.
Thank you. There was something raised around informed consent.
Yeah.
Okay. Some of the
informed consent. Because I'm trying to find 5.1. Section 5.1 of the Principal Act says, subject to provisions of section 4 and 5 of the
5.1.
And they say there's no definition of informed consent. Now, the reason why I raise this is I think it's up to the Bureaucrats, and maybe the department can maybe cast light on this, that not every facility that provides simulation for GP is actually offering or providing counseling. There seems to be no control over it. And also, there's no control over what kind of counseling is given. There seems to be a set criteria or a set presentation, whatever, where it's balanced, non-directive, and it gives the woman the best possible information on how to make the best choice. And many of the, again, pro-life groups quote a certain court case, and I'll read it if I may, Chair. A common law informed consent requirement rests on three legs, independent legs: knowledge, appreciation, and consent. And knowledge means that a woman who consents to discrimination of pregnancy must have full knowledge of the nature and extent of the harm and risk, as opposed to the RNE. There's another stuff with the genetics, we can word it our way, it doesn't have to be. The requirement of appreciation implies more than mere knowledge, that the woman who gives consent to discrimination of a pregnancy must also comprehend and understand the nature and extent of the harm of it. And then the last requirement of consent means that the woman must, in fact, subjectively consent to the harm or risk associated with discrimination of a pregnancy, and her consent must be comprehensive in that it must extend to the entire transaction inclusive of its consequences. And I get the feeling that it's left up to each practitioner to decide how they give counseling, if any. And to me, there should be a test, as I've mentioned before, the department with the experts in the field, both pro and against abortion, or pro-life and pro-choice, to get together and have one set counseling package that is then given or shown to the woman when she comes to a seminar.
I stand to you for this. My understanding is that this special training includes counseling as one of its
But my problem is it's up to the particular practitioner could lead somebody either for or against having an abortion, lead them one way or the other. And I think, honestly, the department should come up with a counseling package that every practitioner just puts in a DVD or the video as possible and lets them watch it. No, but you could explain what informed consent is.
Sorry.
You see, I was just looking at the Dr. Moody was saying the counseling, when providers are trained, counseling is done, it's part of good practice, but should not be used as a means to deny. She was responding to one of the questions we were dealing with. And then the nurse was saying the counseling is adequate since it is the manner in which it is addressed in the act. I'm just looking into some of the submissions here. The National Health Act deals with the whole question of the consent of the youth, the big clause there. So whatever you, and I think we did discuss with that, the fulcrum of the legislation we're dealing with rests especially on the National Health Act. And I think it gives your clause present consent of the user. If you find subject to Section 8 to say the health services may not be provided to user without user's informed consent. Why do we have to do that? As a national health is saying that, I'm looking at
the definition in that act about what informed consent actually is.
I don't know. Can I give Dr. Fale?
Thank you, sir. The section you're referring to is section 7 of the National Act.
Section 7, eh? Yes. Yes. Okay.
And let me just say something about informed consent, and I've been saying it in ethics. Informed consent is something that rests on knowledge, and in ethics you'll say information. Appreciation in ethics you'll say comprehension. And thereafter you give consent, and we'll say volition in ethics. And the volition implies that if I've given you information, you've comprehended it, and we can even go to say both of us agree that this has been comprehended. You are then informed, and through a process of volition on your part as a user, you'll then give consent. And I think knowledge, appreciation, and consent, and information, comprehension and volition actually are the same words. I know knowledge, appreciation and consent has always been used because, again, it's been a thread in all the legal arguments that have gone, and I know that would happily use knowledge, appreciation. And if we look at our act, there will be reference to knowledge, appreciation. But basically, that's all that like. Once you have information, you've comprehended it, and many submissions referred to the challenge or disabled, you have to make sure that they understand. If the person cannot speak, you have to make sure that they understand through word of mouth. If they can see and they cannot talk back, you have to use graphic pictures. And that's all there is to informed consent. You give consent based on your being informed. And I think that's the easiest definition I can give to informed consent. And one other thing is, when you counsel, and again, I'm a clinical genetic trained person, when you talk about counseling, and you said it should be non-mandatory and non-directed, that's exactly what you mean. You can't direct a person either for or against. The decision has got to be that user's decision. And that's why it's critical that you sit there and you give the information. You can't even say, I think you should say this, I think you should say that, or I think you should think like that. You wait for that person to actually give you their interpretation of the vision. And that's non-directed. I used a classic example when I was listening to Honorable Cheryl Gadsby. She actually could work in some of the submissions, or the people who gave submissions. And that's exactly directive counseling.
she was not supposed to be close to them. When immediately you say, I think that's what you should mean, or I think this is what you are saying, that's directive, and you should be. And I think the principal act also accommodates that. It says that it should be non-mandatory and non-directive. And already that is covered. I don't know how else it could be done.
Are you all happy with that one?
Yes, Robert. If you refer to the National Health Act under Section 52, Section 47, it says there, 6.1c, the benefits, risks, costs, and consequences danger associated with each person, and B, user rights to the food health services and explain the implications of the effect of food. It's in there, for sure, and I think that this act does not compel anyone to have a termination agreement. Mm-hmm. This act enables a person who will request a termination agreement to have access to the patient. Mm-hmm. And I think that the fundamental issue of informed consent will be abided by, and the fundamental issue of counseling will be abided by. If it has been raised that in certain areas counseling is not inadequate, then I think it's for the department to take issue with that and to correct that and not to try to make legislation to do that. Because if they not do that, so for us, if anyone comes up with to say that in this particular case there is not adequate counseling, then it will be attended to. But that goes across the board. Is whether it's a termination of pregnancy, whether it's an HIV positive person, whether it's an MDR-TB person, whether it's a person needing a renal transplant, or whatever the issue is. It will be the same across the board, because counseling and informed consent are the same for all issues.
What I was saying, we proceed? We're all together on that one. Sorry? Thank you very much, honorable members, for dealing with that one. That was the informed consent. Are there still any other things you want to raise under definitions? There was a point, not sure it's going to fall under definitions, that was raised by Dr. Slang. What is this? What is this? I'm just looking for this particular section. This was a section. Where is the confirmation? Can you take a tea break? Mm-hmm. And come back. Tea break and then you come back. Maybe by then we'll get more seats. There are no seats here. Madam. We are still on definition. There was something the chair was looking for. What was it? I don't know where this is. Maybe let me just put it towards. I can't find now. Oh, this is Dr. Atlas thing. I'm looking for Dr. Atlas. You see, there was a section there. Maybe let me just say it, and then members will remind me. Remember, there was a section that says the both the. Oh no, it was in the principal F, yes, thank you very much. Now you must guide me how to do this. It was in the principal F, no. It was in the principal F. Yes, now I remember very well. Principal F 2C. Remember that one. Now my guide me how to deal with this one, remember. So see, he says there, and again there was another person who raised this. I can't remember who was the person. There were two submissions about this particular issue. He says, after 20 weeks of gestation period, we are asking you to have gestation period. If a medical practitioner, after consulting with the medical practitioner, or the registered nurse, he was saying, we should not include a registered nurse. No, no. You see, yeah, it says a registered nurse, but we agree. But now, in the amended version, it should therefore include a registered nurse. And you are saying we can't include a registered nurse in this provision because it's an advanced stage of after 20 weeks gestation period. And you think at that level, it's either a doctor or a midwife. You also get, it's not a definition.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah.
Hmm? But where is it in the amended version? Oh, Dr. Ness.
What actually refers to that is, in the amendment, it says everywhere where it's required, registered midwife, it should be registered midwife and registered nurse. So that's basically what it is. And I think what you're referring to say is what Dr. Mshanga's opinion was. He thought maybe it should be a matter of saying after 20 weeks, it should be the medical practitioner in consultation with another medical practitioner, or a registered midwife, and not including a registered nurse. And I think that was the
opportunity. You got it right. Comment members on that one. Welcome, Dr. Rabinovitz. I like the swapping. I like you. I like the swapping. You see the problem, the principal act will then add, whether the rest of this work will add registered nurse. But what I'm trying to say, the consequence of that amendment will then say, after 20 weeks, registered nurse or registered midwife. In this case, we need to disqualify at that level. Can you guys, can I get a comment? Mr. Watcher? I agree with you. And then it actually puts this thing, you know. How do you put it now? I agree, I think that's an amendment coming from Mr. Whitewater, but how do you put it in now in actual ensuring that it refers to elegance in the legislation?
Being applicable under section 2.1 of the principal text.
All together. Provided it, seven is having proceed, provided it excludes under section 2.1c of the principal act, something like that, you then have to draft it elegantly, that I'm saying, that's pushing it as the layman. Dr. Kaula? Are you comfortable? Honorable Matsuna.
Sir, I just want to ask you on this. It means, therefore, after this 1.2.1c of the principal act has been amended with the section 7.
Yes.
Specifically under 20 weeks.
After
20 weeks of surgery. Then, no registered nurse can handle the
deficiency,
only
midwife. After Monday, and then it says, Honorable Medical Practitioner, after consultation with another medical practitioner or the registered nurse. We don't substitute or a registered nurse. We just leave a seat. No? Is that right? Thank you very much. Thank you. Lawyers will draft it properly. I have got it in the definition of this not amendment, the definition. But now we're actually it's going to close further. Are there any other things in the definition, therefore? None. No amendment. So no amendment in the definition. No amendment to the definition, agreed?
There's no amendment. I just want clarity, because I've got a report by Smart Corporate.
And we have a free vote. So some people are voting yes, some will know. And another people are voting yes, they want to know about the training of the nurses. So while we're under definition and registered midwives are also being registered nurses, can I just ask what a training the nurses will be going on exactly? If you can just unpack that for us, how long it is, etc. And another will be some form of practical work, what that will entail. And obviously, World Health Organization has set up some guidelines for training. Will your training fall in line with the World Health Organization? I see someone nodding in the back. So the questions I have to ask, the questions I'll be asking the talk, I'm looking to see some practical training of the nurses. Thank you, Jeff.
To the submission. I think the last submission of the day was Mosotho Gabriel. And she unpacked that very clearly as to what the training and things. And I think I can't add more than that.
Let's get it there so that we can all see it. That was iPad.
What number is it?
What number is it? I'm looking for it.
Might have been done under question time, I don't know.
31. Number 31. So what are we saying here? Let's repeat it, Dr. Paul. That was the Mosotho Gabriel. Can you guide us now? We've got the submission 31. Waiting for the department to come back to the place.
I can't give you that.
Can you repeat yourself?
I'm not going to say. What happened is, she actually indicated the number of hours during the training, what actually happened, and I can't give you the details when you do it. But it was the same very clear. And I think it might have been a question from another.
It doesn't indicate here. It was Chair 9. He was responding to a question in which this was unpacked. But it's not contained in the response submission. It's not contained.
Dr. Alpas, want to help us?
Yes.
But Dr. Hoffman?
I'm involved with the training. And the training course, the theoretical part of the training is 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. That it's a course that is the nursing council just accredited the course and the Department of Health. So it's a 2 week theoretical course, and after that you do the practical training in the hospital clinic. And it's depending on how handy someone is, how many you let them do. But they do at least 20. And if I think they're not good enough, they have to do more. So I see all of them, at least here the rest of the case that have been trained, I see them before they actually get the green light to go ahead and they can do it on their own. And they're still, we
back to check on how they're doing. And especially once a year, I go to oversight and I see how they're doing. So this is a really strange hard work. And there's a thick manual that I put. They have to, you can ask that from I put. They have the...
Thank you. But
thank you.
Thank
you. I just wanted to at least discuss the next and that I'm not to be involved about when they are doing things, they only seems to do manual customers. This is not a delivery. But anything about things we are supposed to be a delivery, so they are not trained in delivery. If they have to do that, then they have to do it to be competent to be able to deliver. Because at that time, if you go back to the discussion that we had, you said that they are voting, it's not the college, it's are voting like that. It's a suggestion that you get a best to be paid because they are viable to have. I don't know if you can talk to me.
The iPad was saying introduced last year what is called training follow-up, measure of impact follow-up report may be useful for members to see the manual, the training manual. I think that's the point. I think that was in the response to the question that I raised by iPad. Thank you very much, Dr. Adlati.
And then even the counseling is also mentioned in that part of that training.
Honorable Dr. Adlati.
Yeah, I also have a question of the doctor.
If you use the mifepristone and the misoprostol, that is the sort of medical abortion. And you can give the tablets and women take them home. Which are only up to 7 weeks. And then women can go home and they abort at home. It's like a miscarriage, but the pregnancy up to 7 weeks is so small that it's just some blood clots that So it would really make it much more accessible if we would be allowed to use mifepristone as well. And nurses can easily do that.
But I have read, I have read just this last thing in the Medical Chronicles, that it is a disgrace that doctors have allowed children of 12 and 14 to be treated with hormones that have been subjected them
It isn't a hormone, it is an anti-projection that works against the hormone, but just against the pregnancy hormone, so only a bad thing. And just taking one tablet, and that one tablet is really not going to have an effect for weeks. It's just something that you're taking now and that's it. No. And it's been used since 88 in France, and then after that in many other countries in Europe and in America. China has been using it since the 80s, and it's been proven very safe and
effective. Did you want us to advocate
for the intervention? Well, I wish it had been in the amendment, but it isn't. And I think if the intervention is more complicated, if we get that now, I think we must do that later.
See, it came up in the presentation that the department doesn't, or the health department doesn't allow for medical abortion. Mm-hmm. Only surgical, can I just get some clarity from the department? Is that true? Because it came up in a few presentations, and if so, when will medical abortion be allowed?
Thank you. we are currently developing guidelines in international law. We do not allow the people to have not guided anyone on how to do it, but if you have a
Thank you very much. Now there was something raised. By Stetson Kesserman. Remember, that's a meeting of Kesserman. I'm not sure he wrote it down, and again, I think we should deal with this thing quickly. We have it. All have the submission of Dr. Rajan Richard. Richard Bezelman. 114. You all have the submission. You were saying on the all together. You are saying on page 3, log 3, 1, on the amendment. Remember that's what this is, eh? Are we all having that submission? You was on the aspect of designation of termination of pregnancy services. Remember that section, I think it's B. Yeah? It's 3B, am I right? 3AA. Am I right? No, 3 all have that copy, and I remember that process. You are saying, where is this health facility has 24 hour maintained, it complies with the requirements referred to in 180 above. Because of the facilities determining the services must comply with all these things. You are saying in his own view that if you allow 24 hours to be a problem, was nobody does termination in 24 hours time. Remember that submission. And he says if we put this, we are putting an onerous burden on the facility in terms of this 24 hour thing. And you are saying that we should reconsider the particular issue, and I hereby support the Church Testament to be retained in its present form as this facility increased access to the integral improved access. Remember that submission there? Eh? You are having problems saying that it must just be 24 hours maintaining it for it to comply to the attenuation of service, because it can't be 24 hours. That's your page 2 of the submission. That was, that's 114. No, I've both taken what is written and what is said.
What really happened is that the department ensured the quality of
care. Speak louder, there are no mics and this seems like raining, irritating.
The department attempts to ensure levels of care at the appropriate level of institution. But it is not true to say that a termination of pregnancy, first termination of pregnancy, cannot be undertaken at a facility that provides a 24-hour hospital service. Because if you look at a hospital like Middlebury Hospital, Edendale Hospital, Global Gem Hospital, whatever, those hospitals provide a full spectrum of care. But yes, it would not be one that would be chosen to be designated as a termination of pregnancy facility. But it would have, it has all the capacity and all the facilities to provide a safe choice of termination of pregnancy. And what is being said is that if the facility is providing a 24-hour accessible environmental service, it therefore does have the capacity both on physical infrastructure and human resources to undertake that. And that's all that is being said. It's not being saying that you will do all termination of pregnancies at that facility. But what we are saying is that if the facility offers that type of service, then it certainly can offer termination of pregnancy as well.
But you are then saying that if you then put this clause as this, you are saying the problem may create problems for the private practitioners who don't have 24 hours. And you may inadvertently disqualify them in some cases. I'm just putting his argument.
No, I don't think that's what is being said. What is being said is that if the facility offers a 24-hour service, then termination of pregnancy can be conducted there. The others would have to apply to be registered to conduct termination of pregnancy. So the private sector, if they apply and then they fulfill the criteria, then they'll be able to conduct termination of pregnancy.
Yes, I
read
it this way, the department.
Thank you very much, Dr. Tarapino. Honor Martinez.
Yeah,
I was going to say a department
to satisfy us.
Are you still in the same area?
Yeah.
Okay.
Whether it's up to date. It's not being sort of addressed under portability and regulation for ladies.
That would be a problem. Because this one is defining a place where termination of pregnancy may take place. And then, so that it's not something hidden somewhere. And then, therefore, this may take place, not this, but it may take place when you comply with A to G, and then the minister has been approved by the MEC, if I'm not getting the government either. So A to J is going to be very critical in this one. So that means the legislation itself compels you to understand this particular problem. The regulation may then deal with other things. The Senate, how long?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think just to expand on what Professor said, the 10 conditions are used to designate a place, and I concur with the chair. And this has been used previously. You know that the minister has actually withdrawn license from certain places. And the 10 you see there are actually the current regulations where the minister can withdraw or designate a place where termination of pregnancy can be done. And the 24-hour maternity service, as Prof. indicated, was just for specific areas in the provinces, according to the amendment, where this is already being done. And because of the capacity and the ability to do all these other things that Prof. explained, those facilities will not necessarily be considered to be able to do this. But even then, there's still the proviso that they should satisfy A, B, C, D, E, F. If they don't, even if they are a 24-hour maternity service, they wouldn't be designated.
Any other question around this? Dr. Richard Buzzerman, Buzzerman. Okay, good. So you are not marked in such a real sentence in human education. I think you apologize. Any other question on this? Are there any other issues that you want to raise broadly in the legislation as a whole now? Looking into all the things that is guide that people are living, anything outside. Yes, is it relevant to what we're dealing with here?
Well, yes. Well, the section in the Principal Act, Section 3, Part 3, to do with minors, I have to raise it. To give you some background here, even when this law was approved in 1996, the then GP just had a pro-choice stance then, object to this court, I have to raise it again. About minors not having to, even I understand why minors don't have to get the permission of their parents, because of the circumstances, I understand that, but not even informing the parents that they are about to have a termination of pregnancy. And I say this because I think our different laws are moving in different directions. Like we have the Children's Law, or Children's Act now, which we passed a few weeks ago in Parliament. And if you remember, I think in every party's caucus, there was a big hoo-ha regarding that clause about chastisement, corporal punishment by parents. Remember, there was going to be a clause which forbids parents to smack their children. And every caucus, I think, without exception, was against that. And, so we're saying that, we're saying on one hand that we allow parents to chastise their children, obviously not abuse, but chastise, but yet again, we're saying they have no, there's no obligation of the child to inform them that they're going to have a serious operational procedure such as an abortion. So, I'm just trying to get a balance of, where are we going? And surely parents would want to, I think most parents would want to know, that their child's having abortion. And shouldn't we limit the age? Because it just says a minor. Now, minor, according to the Act, the definition says anywhere from 18 and below. And I do understand that in the present people, they don't get many 12-year-olds walking in. I appreciate that. But it's still a principle. Yeah. So I don't know
but where do you actually derive this thing to help say that must not inform the parent.
Well, section 5.3 says in case of a pregnant minor, anyone under 18, a medical practitioner or a registered midwife, as the case may be, shall have registered midwife, as the case may be, shall advise such minor to consult with her parents, guardian, family members, or friends before the pregnancy is terminated. Provided that the termination of the pregnancy shall not be denied because such minor chooses not to consult them. Or even inform them. So my point is, okay, I understand that the
you are a medical practitioner. Person comes to you. You advise. You can't actually follow to check if the parents are informed. You advise, you tell them, you inform them, go and tell your parents. Or you can't hear if you don't have your parents or your family, you know, or friend or whatever. Mm-hmm. But whoever you're telling them that, don't do what the doctor here was actually telling us. Then you say, because of whatever, I will therefore deny you the opportunity. But it says advice. It means it tells the child to go and tell.
Yeah, but there's an obligation on the child to inform the parents.
How would you do the obligation? Maybe let us think now, how would you put an obligation on the child?
Well, I mean,
there's a doctor there, you know,
the
smoker.
One of the old horses came and the baby. And the issue was that the practice of the legislation is that it's abortion on demand. So, my colleague was also talking about that. You don't want to put the obligation on the child, but do something with an obligation on the child to perform the abortion to inform the parents, or to advise. And then the defense of that was, if you feel that their fathers and mothers will be off the child, they're terrifying for them, that's why it's difficult. But now, my question that I have, I think it is the topic of mother country. I believe that the children's bill has made this abortion on demand. It was applicable to 14, now it's applicable to 12. Is that correct? We have not got that yet.
No. I was on the Social Development Committee, and I don't know verbatim, but the general gist of that clause is a child 12 years old or older, 12 to age 17, who's having any form of procedure operation must be informed of what the procedure operation is, and can't basically counsel them, you know, what it's all about, what's going to happen, etc. That's all. Yeah. And it's nothing to do with any particular operation or procedure. No, but the fact is, and it has to, what the children's bill then says is that it has to be mandatory counseling, basically, for children. That's what the children's bill then says. That there has to be, that's another issue then, actually, thank you for reminding me. that the children's bill places the onus that every child has to be counseled beforehand. You know, we might be here getting a non-mandatory. So I don't know what, you know. So that's another issue.
Sorry. Mr. Matata?
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Just to mention that the children's act, the clause that honor of the law, those clauses are subject to this act. And it also makes a distinction between medical treatment and surgical operation. It is true, in fact, in section 129, subsection 3, it also says that the child is duly assisted by his or her parent or guardian. But as I said in the beginning, it says subject to section 5.2 of the choice on termination of pregnancy, which therefore means that for a child who demands or should have children, there is no way that we can enforce in both section 129.3. It remains the choice of the child. Maybe just to add that a woman in terms of the principal act is defined as a woman of any age.
And the Constitution also says that everyone shall have the right of access to health and health facilities. It says everyone.
Is that's the secret secret deal, no? Thank you very much, Dr. Apino. Okay, let's clarify the issue. Any other point?
Chair, to be not mentioning, I mean, the point the honorable member of Rubenitis made, maybe the practitioner should inform the parents, not because of the reasons that she outlined about ostracization and whatever.
But why do you do something already to cut it by a number of other parents that are children feel, children's, what do you all call it abuse? Children's heir to that subject, put that subsequent to this particular legislation. Mm-hmm. Why then we want to do something to them that?
So I've just got three questions left, Jim.
Yes.
I just want to call them before lunch, maybe. I just want clarity. The lady from the department didn't allude to it. It's about the register of abortions. I understand from one opportunity you've got to stipulate, register the abortion and inform the department of abortion. Now, there seems to be a bit of a grey area between 21 and 27 weeks. And from what I've been reading from the submission, from 28 weeks, it's an induced pregnancy and it seems to be accepted around the world. But between 21 and 27 weeks, it's a bit of a grey area. I know you said with technology, people's babies can live, but often they do have deformities of some sort. And if there is an abortion or induced pregnancy, I don't know what to call it, should it not be on the register as well with the other abortions? I know you said it goes on to the birth and death register, and it's registered in the stillbirth. Yeah. But the Act clearly says you've got to use one of three, or more than one of them, but at least one of the three criteria in the Act to induce a pregnancy after 20 weeks. Now, nowhere is there a record of that. Why the particular practitioner used one of those criteria? That's not clear. I'm worried. I'm just wondering, Chair, what the thinking is from the department on why those types of abortions aren't registered as abortions.
Thank you very much. Department, want to help us?
I'm digesting it. Basically.
You can allow for consultation.
Professor Jim Thompson here, being in the relevant profession of the system care and service. After 20 weeks, and I think if I may quote what Professor Mtanga said in his submission, during the discussion of the submission, he mentioned that this might actually be a visionary type of section, where after 20 weeks, depending on what would have been discussed, maybe let me fall again onto genetics, which maybe I understand better. If your child is diagnosed by ultrasonic mechanism, ultrasound, to have a particular syndrome, and I can quote here, and we know medically that this particular syndrome, there is no chance that child is just bad. If I may use it, in genetics, using ultrasound, you can determine that the top part of the brain is not there, and you call it anencephaly. And you know very well that even if this child is born, it's going to die. Mm-hmm. And being a medical person or a geneticist, I will discuss this with my patient, and we look at all these things, and eventually the decision is that this pregnancy is terminated, and maybe the patient actually suggests that I cannot be able to look after this child for whatever reason, psychological or whatever. Having done all that, a decision would then be taken, and that's where termination of this particular pregnancy would come in. And that's basically what would be the case. It would have been discussed between the, and I think the age is really of no consequence, because if it's 22 weeks or 26 weeks or 25 weeks, this would be an age where the pregnancy would be terminated. And I don't want to use the term that's honorable, my purpose is gray area, because gray area means anything and it's subject to interpretation. But we made it very clear that if a child is considered to be viable and dies, it will be dealt with under the death and death registration. And that will be after 20 years. And the Act is very clear on that. It doesn't really say anything contrary to that.
Then maybe to speak further on what the doctor has said. There is this young girl, I think she's 18 or 19. Yeah. She was pregnant. I saw her for the past week. Then on Sunday I asked him, why are you no longer pregnant? He said, the doctor had to terminate the pregnancy because it was causing some risk to me by then. Then I said, where's the child together? He said, the child is at home, she's healthy for now, she's bigger. But when I give birth within 20 weeks, she said 25 months, eh? Mm. Yeah, she said she gave birth at 5 months. But the child is alive and she has grown to a bigger person now. Now, I think
what the doctor is saying, it addresses whatever you're trying to say right now. Yeah, what the doctor said was, because of the viability of the baby, the baby, the fact is, if it does die, then it's put onto the test and that's all I want to say. Thank you very much. There's one last question.
Oh.
This one. Just about the cost, because that one gentleman did raise the issue that he's saying, not the first, you know, the child of one day, the third last person that came. Because the Act, or the amendment said that not much, won't be much financial implications, but how? And it will matter, I suppose it will be affected by how many nurses want to get paid. I mean, you might have thousands, which I think then will have a financial implication. You might have a few hundred, and probably won't have much implication whatsoever. But because we're going to go on a 2-4 and have back and forth, what, I mean, have you worked out what the cost of training a nurse will be? At all? Mm-hmm.
I think it's worth it. That is the important thing. And I think anything that is worth it in medical terms, the cost is not an issue.
I think people would say also on the business question, the department has always said that the choice termination of the Veterans Act does not replace family planning and the broader aspect of contraception. It doesn't replace contraception. The choice of termination of pregnancy actually is there to avail itself to the health care of the unfortunate lady who has an unwanted pregnancy or whatever reason. But the council also ensures that there should, as far as possible, not be a repeat unwanted pregnancy. In other words, to advise them on the effective use of contraception thereafter. Now, coming to the cost of inception, the cost is also what we looked at in terms of other factors as well. And I think Professor Mkanda
in your submission indicated that in the last 10 years, the number of deaths of murders in the head hospitals in relationship to unsafe abortion has dropped significantly. And Professor Jack Moodley, in his submission, who is the chair of the Confidential Inquiry into Maternal Death, also said that the number of women in South Africa that are dying as a result of abortion has dropped significantly in the last 10 years because of the safe termination of pregnancy. So I think one has to balance the two. And in any case, these nurses or doctors that have been trained are not trained in isolation only for the termination of pregnancy. There have been other work as well. So it is improving the holistic training and their capacities. So you can't say that good cost is only for termination of pregnancy. It is cost to improve the quality of health care for the people that we serve in the country.
I think that was the point that Sarah was talking about. Now your point sounds reasonable, but in actuality it is a change. And secondly, the practicality of that as well. How then do you know, having put your mandatory part of it, that indeed the child was had informed the relevant people years ago? The policy part of it may equally put the honor on the part of whoever administered the legislation. So, and I think logically, in my own view, we don't want to put such a thing that is good in terms of the feeling of the committee put, but in real terms, it's something that is not practicable. Why do you think?
Can I answer that? And you yourself said that often you do not have an ideal objective, even when you come to.
No. That was not in that concept.
Just to land something to what Lana Mendes said. I mean, if you had a provision where, for example, the medical practitioner would have to contact the parents or the guardian, call them in, explain that their daughter is going to have an abortion, and also give them time to think about it, because it might be a shock to them as well. We don't know. Some people, the parents are probably being shocked as well. And also then try and get the parents, you know, through counselling, which may not be the practitioner's job now, maybe a social worker, to support the children and, you know, nurture them so that they do use contraception, they don't have another pregnancy and need another abortion. Let me go look at these angles.
Yeah, but that's what the key strategy is, in terms of the chain of the process itself. You will terminate having done that, the counseling that in future, to avoid all these unnecessary continuities, use contraceptive, these are the contraceptive processes.
Non-mandatory counseling, doesn't have, you know,
no, but that's the child. Doesn't, that one you don't need to make, it's part of the practitioner's role in dealing with the question of termination. Am I right?
No, you are right, Chair. If you know, Chair, I think in clinical practice, there are ethical guidelines that all professional counselors have to abide by. And I think part of them is ensuring holistic management of the patient. So once the patient comes for a termination of treatment, we go into all the details of why the occurred, etc. And then you give advice of how she can prevent this occurring again. And you then give support there. I think that's the most that you can do. Because I think that you can't then force the person or maintain it, but I think you reinforce it. And that is standard counseling of everyone. That's the first thing. The second thing is that there are other dynamics that come into it, explaining about sexuality and behavior, reproductive health, etc., to young people at school, in terms of HIV, in terms of STIs, and all the rest of it. That is all there. It's not only the counseling specific to the termination of pregnancy, it's the counseling that goes together with social responsibility and reproductive health responsibility for children, through Department of Education and through families as well.
Yes, Doc.
And under Section 4, counseling, I would say, the state of, we talk about counseling before and after the termination. So it's a continuum. After termination, the counseling, part of the counseling is, please don't go into this again. There are these options. And that's part of the post counseling after termination.
Also, another of my question. Thank you very much. I think are there other issues to be raised? So it means equally on the object of the bill in the consequential amendment that we have made under seven will apply. Oh. Remember? The question of allow registered leave was the way that the country to perform termination of pregnancy. But after 20 weeks, you make the same thing. This will mean consequentially, you have to make a particular amendment as well. Am I right?
If we do the check, we use capacity. Does it mean that we need now to take this, we say this after debating it, we say it to the NCC?
Yeah.
Yeah, because we've made the first step and we've made an amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something else you want to read? Nothing. None. Thank you very much. One of the members, it would seem to me, under okay, let me, it means generally there are no amendments under the main thrust of the food, would I be right to conclude, save the minor one? If that is the case, can I take you to page 1? 21-12-7 is introduced. There's nothing you want to start yourself. Page 1 would be this one. Make people a little bit confused when the first page is running the same. Page 2. No amendment? So that is discussion to inform that it is in the result of the amendment.
Well, the amendment, well then, if we were going to put it to the, I don't know if we're going to go into the definitions or somewhere else in the amendment, but the content is not section. So I don't know where that was going to fit in.
No, we agree that having the...
So then, well then there's
nothing,
we can discuss it and the majority
agrees, no, then it's fine. No, there was no majority, I would avoid it, but I think the consensus amongst ourselves, having discussed all this in the relation to the Constitution, in the relation to the conscientious objection, I mean in the relation to the Civil Union Bill, in the relation to the National Health Act, in the relation to what happened in the Defense Act and the Police Services. Having discussed all that, we then agree that there are no amendments in terms of the Constitution. They are all covered in terms of the various areas that we have already discussed.
Well, then I mean, I would disagree, but I mean, the majority wants to say no, that's fine. You know, I believe it should be in, but that's
okay, so page 2, no amendment? No, thank you very much. Page 3, no amendment? Where's that?
And
they say that they can give people hospital, but that isn't unless it's open for discussion, because it's a game in inventory in the field. But that is an IFP. So this is an IFP. I know, we are quite local in terms of if you reach F, for example, just to give you access to appropriate, and then you say provide appropriate transport. You are putting the burden on the state to provide transport. Can you see the danger of what you are going to say, right? But anyway, thank you very much. You have a little much. Otherwise, page 3, no amendment. I'm putting the whole, I'm not going to go across at all. Page 4, no amendment.
7
amendment, we have reformulated it, provide 21C, provided it excludes, provided it excludes 21C, something like that, I can't remember, you'll see how you put it elegantly. Page 5, no amendment. Page 6, consequential amendment under 2A. Page 7, nothing. There's no other page. Basically, it means there's only one amendment which, before we pass the legislation formally, can we allow the state law advisors and the department to come with a proposed formulation of the only amendment 7? So, yes?
There's something that we noted in our advisor, the legal people. The Nursing Act 1978, Act number 2 of 1978, is actually no longer that act. It's now the Nursing Act number 33 of 2005.
Where's that?
Page two, block number one.
So I can talk to the chair, otherwise you're not going to follow any all of you. So the Nursing Act will be
Nursing Act number 33 of 2005.
33 of 2005. And also,
one.
But that act under the chair has been upgraded. Are we dealing with C and G? Is that right? So it means that we go back to page 1, there are amendments.
Yeah.
You go to page 3, there are amendments. But they are really not, they are very minor, but important. Can we allow the state law advisors and the departmental people to come back with proposed amendments that have been agreed here, and then we will vote on the bill that's coming? Can we come back at 2?
Same venue.
Lunch? Where? They said there'll be lunch here. What time?
1.
1 o'clock, sooner lunch, but you know our police in terms of sooner lunch, but they say it's not your classical sooner lunch that loads your stomach, but it will be quite an appetite. I'm going to hold them accountable if anything happens to any one of us. Thank you very much. Can we just allow the people to make all those amendments? And then lunch here, and then we come back after lunch. Dr. Rabinovich, sorry. Thank you. Let's come back after lunch and finalize. Madam, after lunch. You wanted to say something? Sorry, there's a member here. Okay.
Yeah, can I just sit in before we go for lunch or whatever? After the amendment, are we going to have a debate on this?
We'll come back and deal with all those people. Let's not have to now. Let's deal with it in much more time.
I'm not sure whether all the students are here. They are coming.
Half of the. Oh, it's not there already. Yeah.